We'd like to welcome everyone to the study session for the Mesa City Council for Thursday, March 11, 2010. And we'll begin this morning's meeting with a presentation from the Water Utility Capital, about the Water Utility Capital Improvement Program, or WUCIP. Do you have an acronym for this? WUCIP? WUCIP?
Mayor, no, but we could invent one.
Can we please come up with something?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, this is government. We need acronyms for everything.
We will work on that.
Thank you.
Mayor, Council, with me today are Susan Miller and Jake West. They are assistant directors in the department. Susan.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
You went real faster. Than
oh.
I didn't have a chance.
She's going to go
I'm
faster.
I'm going to go even faster during this, so hold on to your seat.
Okay, so Susan.
Susan Miller is to my left. Jake West is
Hello,
to my
Susan.
Right. And Susan is in charge of water supply. She oversees the treatment plants, the utility control center, and water quality. Jake is in charge of both distributions on the water side and collections on the wastewater side.
Jake and Susan, welcome.
Good morning.
Oh,
Ms. Sorensen?
Proceed. I'm ready. How do I make this thing go?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Council Mayor. We're going to excuse Vice Mayor Jones, who's out of town today.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Vice Mayor Jones.
Oh, okay.
It will not be privileged to participate in this.
Yes, and thank you for naming it as such. That's a compliment. So, I'm hoping this actually starts. We are, as you can see in your packet, we are celebrating this year 100 years of community service. The first water bond for the water system was 1910, and this is a picture of the city's first pump station off of the canal, which I thought was pretty cool. I'm going to go through with you today what we do here in the water program, and that is that we respond to customers' needs, we ensure that we have sustainable supplies, we treat those supplies, we ensure the quality of water in the system, we make sure that the distribution system is working, and we move water to where it needs to go, and then, of course, we meter and deliver water to customers. In total, we estimate the water system to be worth in replacement value over $2.3 billion, so it's quite a large system.
Not counting the pipes that broke yesterday?
including those. And we'll talk about those a little bit later, actually.
No,
thanks for bringing that up, though.
We saw.
Yeah. We thought we'd throw together, too, our view of how we fit into some of your strategic initiatives. I wanted to highlight in particular, one of the things that we're most proud of is that we do have a 100-year assured water supply portfolio. It's a strong portfolio. One of the things that does is it makes things a lot easier for developers who want to build here in Mesa as opposed to other communities. They have to go through a lot fewer hassles and whatnot. And our system is 95% surface water, only about 5% groundwater. It's very renewable, so it's very sustainable. As you can see, we're involved in many regional leadership activities, and we do think that we contribute to the financial stability of the city as well. So here's a diagram of kind of what we're going to go, or part of what we're going to go through today. This actually shows you what we do in the entire department. We take the water from the canals. We run it through our treatment plants. We pump our wells. Some of this water goes directly to reservoirs, some directly into the system. It's then delivered to the customers. We then collect the wastewater from the customers. We control the odors and the corrosion and deliver it to the reclamation plants, and then eventually for reuse. Today, though, we'll just be focusing on the first part of that, which is the water program and how we get water to customers. So I'm going to start with how we respond to customers' needs. We do have around 135,000 active accounts, and annually we respond to about 120,000 service requests. A lot of these are turning on and turning off utilities, but there's a whole slate of other types of service requests and issues that customers have. We have to respond to all of those. Pressure concerns, water quality concerns, leaks, the list goes on. We also do provide irrigation in the city's traditional center. And we always try to help out, you know, if customers just have problems, we get a lot of calls. try to triage those calls and figure out which ones are ones that we should respond to and which ones are really something that a private plumber should respond to. We also ensure sustainable supplies. You guys have seen this a couple of times, but we always break things down in water resources between our on and off project supplies. And the reason we do that is that those two areas of the city are legally distinct in terms of our water resources, meaning that different legal sources supply those areas. They're also fairly physically distinct in terms of our infrastructure. So it's an important demarcation for us.
Would you just, I mean, I sort of know what the on-project, off-project, would you explain why it's called on-project and off-project?
I'm sorry, yeah, you're right. I forget to explain that. On-project refers to lands that are within the Salt River Valley Water Users Association, better known as SRP. And then the lands to the east of the Eastern Canal are not within those boundaries. They're not part of SRP on the water side. They are on the electric side. And we call that off-project.
And the reason why that's, I mean, the Salt River Valley users, a lot of people don't realize that was established about the time we did our first station.
Actually, yeah, that's about right.
About 100 years, a little over 100 years, basically to build the project and to build the Roosevelt Dam.
That's exactly right. And it was in 1909 that the Kent Decree came out that established all the water rights that run with those lands in the project area.
And so those lands basically to the west of the Eastern Canal were literally pledged against the...
To build the dams.
To build the Roosevelt Dam, which is why you have the Salt River Project and those that are on project, off project. Because those east of it had no rights to that water because they didn't pledge their land.
That's exactly right, Mayor.
I know that oversimplifies it, but...
No, actually, that's about accurate, and it's an important...
That's about accurate, huh? Okay. I'm glad I'm at least close.
It's very accurate.
Okay.
And it is important to us. And actually, our rights... in those lands, in the Salt River Project lands, are also very superior in the system in general. In SRP, you have different categories of rights that represent different priorities depending on the flow of the river. Ours are very senior rights in the system, which is good for us. And it's one of the reasons why, frankly, when we talk about future availability of resources, we really focus off project, because our on-project supplies are so secure that we don't need to focus a lot of attention on them. Also, our infrastructure on project is very secure. We have adequate treatment capacity. We have adequate redundancy in our wells, which is nice. So a lot of times we focus off project instead because that's where a lot more of our challenges lie.
Okay. Councilmember Higgins.
Yeah. Who supplies, you know, the eastern edge of the city out at Meridian University? Because it's white right there. So.
Right. Thank you for pointing that out. That's Arizona Water Company.
Oh, okay. So we have parts of the city that...
That's correct. We estimate there's about 2,000 accounts within our city boundaries that are served by Arizona Water Company.
Great, thank you.
We don't have that exact number, but that gives you an idea. So we currently use around ballpark 100,000 acre-feet of water. Kind of depends on the weather and demand, and it fluctuates a bit. On project, that's about half. Off project, it's about half. Just this last year was the first time that off project demands ever exceeded on project demands, which gives you an indication of where most of the growth in our system is occurring. It's mainly occurring off project. We do serve around 155 square miles, and we estimate we serve around 500,000 people, which is a little bit higher than the city's population, you might notice, but that's because we do serve the county as portions of the county as well. Our plan for build-out is that we'll use around 155,000 acre-feet of water. We do expect on-project uses to increase a little bit, and we would, you know, we assume that light rail and other development downtown will increase demands. But off-project, we do expect a rather large increase in demands, nearly 100% increase in demands over time. And we expect build-out to occur 2040, if not later. So, as I mentioned earlier, we don't focus much on our water rights on project. They're pretty solid. But off project, we rely on a basket of water goods, so to speak. Leases, federal allocations, and other water from the Colorado River, And that's all delivered through the Central Arizona Project System. We also, back in the 90s, along with some other cities, paid into raising the level of Roosevelt Dam. And as a consequence, we have rights to some of the water that fills behind that space. We call it new conservation space. That's water that, even though it's on the Salt River system, that's water that we're allowed to transfer off project and use off project. We also entered into, as you know, the exchange with the Gila River Indian Community. We deliver reclaimed water to them. They deliver us back CAP water. We rely on groundwater. We've also banked a large amount of surface water underground, and we can pull this back out of our wells as needed. Also, we do have some limited direct use of reclaimed water for turf facilities. This is a simplified chart, but hopefully...
Hey, Catherine, yeah. And that last point, I think that's something that needs maybe to be repeated, that our effluent, unlike many cities who keep their effluent in the system and use it primarily for reuse and turf and things like that, would you please repeat what we do with most of our reclaimed water?
Yeah, thank you. Most of our reclaimed water either goes to the Gila River Indian Community for direct use on agriculture as part of the exchange.
Well, explain the exchange. The exchange is we trade...
We trade
basically dirty water for clean water.
We like to say we trade very high-quality reclaimed water for Central Arizona Project water, yes.
I know what you say. That's how the only way I can understand it.
It's treated
water because it's used in agriculture. But basically, let's call it used water, all right?
Yes.
We trade used water for unused water. Well, I'm digging a deeper hole, aren't
I? Yeah.
Gently used. Pre-owned water.
Water. There we go.
We are downstream of Vegas, remember. But, yes, okay. In theory, it's gently used.
Yes,
right. Anyway,
we trade with the heat. We ship our water downstream that we've used, and then we trade for them for Colorado River water that
right.
we get out of the canal.
And in case you forgot, it is a 5-4 ratio, which means we send 5 acre feet of reclaimed water, we receive 4 acre feet of CAP.
But I get a lot of questions from people thinking that, you know, our reclaimed or gently used water would be available for typical uses. And we've made a trade, which I believe was a very good trade, but we've made a good trade to use that in other ways other than keeping it in system to water to irrigate and things like that, except for a small percentage of
You're right, but it's an important point because a lot of other cities did invest in what we call purple pipe systems, which are kind of dual systems, and so that, other developers or developers in other cities can rely on those cities to provide direct pipes for turf usage. We don't do that here. We have other mechanisms to do that.
But Mayor and Council and Catherine, we've talked about this. In the future, we're looking at plans where we may be, you know, we have to meet our obligations with the Gilas. But in the future, there may be opportunities for us to find. But it's a significant investment in infrastructure, too, because you're, you know, treating that water and then you got to bring it all the way back into the system.
Right.
So, but it is something we're looking
at. Wanted to point out how our water inventory is different than a lot of other cities who have. Because they didn't have that for whatever reason.
Yeah.
They have invested in that infrastructure. They have kept it in system. And it's not that we're just throwing this water out.
Oh,
we're not
no.
using it. We're using it very wisely. We're using it to trade for other water. And hopefully in the future, and I know some of the things, especially out in the Gateway area, we're looking at running some delivery systems so we can have untreated water
Absolutely.
That we'll use for irrigation. So we don't have to use treated water for things like irrigation stuff.
Absolutely.
Like that.
And, you know, we're very proud of the exchange. We feel like it was very innovative. It's very unique. And it was part of a global water rights settlement. So it's something we're very proud of. Absolutely.
Councilmember Higgins? Richens? Still early.
You might mention the other way that we use our effluent, because it's not just, we just don't. Trade with Gilas.
No, that's true. We also recharge reclaimed water from the Northwest Water Reclamation Plant up at the Granite Reef Underground Storage Project. We also deliver water along with the other cities that are involved in 91st Avenue Wastewater Treatment Plant to the Palo Verde Nuclear Power Plant. So we'll be hearing more about all of that.
Okay.
So anyway, this chart is meant to show you that we do believe that we have enough water to meet demands very long term and even to build out. This chart also shows you that we will be, the dark blue is our CAP And we will be relying primarily on our CIP supplies. Included in that is the exchange water. So really you're relying on reclaimed water, but it comes to you as CAP water. We will also be relying on groundwater and our new conservation space water. There is some additional reclaimed water that will be available to us, and we like to think of that as our buffer. Because we do build contingencies. It's very difficult to predict demands very long term over decades. You certainly don't want to aim low. So we feel that that's a good buffer for us. Also, we don't know what's going to happen in terms of climate change or drought. There might be new infrastructure constraints. There might be new regulations that change how we use water. So we like to build a buffer for all of that. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about how we treat supplies. We obviously treat supplies to protect our public health. We do that in two ways, actually. We do it at surface water treatment plants, obviously, but also at wells where we do chlorinate water before it goes into the system. We have two plants. One is the Val Vista Water Treatment Plant, and the other is the Brown Road Water Treatment Plant. The Val Vista Water Treatment Plant is a joint venture. It's operated by Phoenix. It's located up on Lindsay and McDowell. The total plant capacity is around 220 MGD. It's a very large plant. We own about 90 MGD of that.
Mayor.
Its source is the Salt River
MGD
Project.
MGD stands
I'm
for?
I'm sorry, million gallons per day. Thank you. Its source is the Salt River Project, or Salt River through the South Canal. And it serves primarily the West Mesa area. Construction on this plant started in about 1975, so it's a fairly old plant. Obviously, then life cycle replacement of components is an issue for us. And also there, water quality regulations are become only stricter over time. They never become less strict. So we're also looking at having to invest some money into the plant to deal with stricter regulations and changing water quality. There's two main points where we can transfer water on and off project, and we do so frequently. We are allowed to take the water rights from West Mesa, from the on-project area, and transfer them off project. We just have to then pay it back within a certain period of time. We have transfer stations 1 and 3, which are our main power horses to do that. We also use those transfer stations to move that new conservation space water, which we can only right now gain access to through Val Vista, but then we pump it back uphill off project. Our other plant is the Brown Road Water Treatment Plant. This one is Mesa owned and operated. It's about 72 MGD. Its source water is Colorado River water. And it mainly serves the off-project area, mainly northeast Mesa, though some water does trickle down to southeast Mesa as well. This plant became operational in 1985. It was, if not the first, then I think one of the very first surface water treatment plants that came online in the valley to treat Colorado River water. We are there also looking at life cycle replacement of components. We're also proposing at some point that we build a third water treatment plant in southeast Mesa. It would be Mesa owned and operated as well. It would have about 30 MGD of capacity. It also would, its source water would also be the Colorado River, and it would mainly serve southeast Mesa, though I would say that it also would provide redundancy for northeast Mesa. The two plants can provide redundancy for each other. Also, we are in talks right now with the city of Apache Junction, with Apache Junction Water Company, to see if they have some interest in partnership with us. They have some need of surface water as well.
Councilmember Summers has a question.
Yeah.
And this plant would be used to treat clean but undrinkable CAP water and then clean it up even more to make it potable.
Potable, drinkable. Yes.
Potable.
Yes.
Potable. Then
yeah.
You can, but it's clean water coming in, because this is at Signal Butte and Elliott,
mm-hmm.
Correct?
That's correct. And we already have a reservoir there and some other facilities there as well. I believe we're going to be having a meeting in the neighborhood to discuss some of those issues on the 23rd.
And then this plant would also redirect some of that untreated, clean, though not drinkable, CAP water for use over at the Gaylord.
Yeah, that Yes, thank you, Councilmember Summers. That's what Mayor Smith was referring to earlier. Right. There will be a line that comes off of the CAP canal, which on this map is is it 4 miles to the east, roughly? So there'll be a line that connects the CAP canal to this plant. And then before that line reaches the treatment plant itself, there will be a branch off of it so that we can deliver untreated CAP water for turf irrigation.
And one more, Mayor. How critical is water delivery down here? Because I've noticed on the maps that you've flipped through so far, it seems that the area south of Guadalupe has been outside of any one of the boundaries so far.
And that's a rather simplified boundary that we've drawn. As I mentioned earlier, water from the north, from the Brown Road Water Treatment Plant, does in fact serve Southeast Mesa. But it's difficult to push enough water down into Southeast Mesa. And one of the reasons for that is that there are some, let me move forward a couple of slides. Southeast Mesa, the plan for Southeast Mesa is very large points of demand. An example of that is ASU Polytech, CMC Steel, Gateway Airport. They tend to be large points of demand. And the infrastructure, our infrastructure is sized, the pipes themselves are sized such that sometimes it's difficult for us to push enough surface water south. So this is an area where we do tend to rely on wells more for base loads and base demands and peak demands more than in other areas of the city.
In your best estimation, is that lack of capacity potentially creating an issue with economic development down here and bringing in companies that are going to need water supply, particularly commercial and light industrial?
In general, when they've come in through the economic development group, we do have a lot of wells down there. So the wells are our stopgap measure until this plant comes online. So we have always sold it that we have this plant. We've been planning for this plant as long as I've been at the city, 10 years. We've always looked at another plant in this area. It's just the timing of it. So we've said as our stopgap measure, we have wells, and we continue to drill wells in this area, and we can meet short-term demands on a short-term basis with those wells.
So we're patchworking until
that's a financial decision, and I don't think it's outside of what we've done in other areas.
Yeah, and the idea is eventually that, you know, it costs a lot of money and because it takes a lot of energy to either pump to lift water. And if you're relying on the Brown Road, you're either pushing water a long way or you're lifting water through pumps. So eventually you get to a point where it's much more economical to build a surface water treatment plant there, or it could be long term, simply because you're not having to either lift it way up or move it a long distance.
Well, and also the other thing to keep in mind, and really what we're talking about is timing. And it depends on how fast or slow the economy might recover and what types of demands we might see in right. Southeast Mesa. So really it's a timing issue, but ultimately it's important to understand and back up on the slide, the chart that I showed you of our the long-term picture of our water supplies, our supplies do come to us physically as surface water.
Right.
So we can use groundwater as a stopgap. We can use it for some number of years if necessary, but ultimately we need to have this plant in place.
Gotcha. Councilman Summers.
Well, if we were to have a high water use, but a major employer look at this area, like a microchip plant uses a lot of water.
Right.
But the jobs there, it's a high number of jobs, and they're very, very good paying jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have enough water to supply something like that off the wells, or are we losing opportunities potentially for lack of supply?
I don't think we're losing opportunities, and I think that we can get by on our wells. Again, it is a matter of timing, and it's a matter of when we might see that growth. But what we're doing to be safe is that we are looking at we are currently undertaking the basis of design for this plant. Okay, so we are currently moving forward with at least the design portion of it, and we will go through a full design phase. But then that takes quite some time. That buys us a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And then we can take a look and see, okay, is demand coming back? If so, we'll just continue right into a construction phase. If not, we'll take some time, take a step back, continue to rely on wells, wait for those demands to build back up, and then start construction. But in the meantime, we are preparing. So we'll have a plan in place so that if demand picks up, DMB picks up, we're ready.
Thank you, Mayor. We have a plan for this area for 100,000 high-wage jobs. It's important to realize that to do that, we need capital investment in infrastructure like roads and sewer lines and water supply in order to do that effectively. Thank you,
absolutely.
Mayor.
And just, Mayor and Council, you'll notice in our plan, and you'll see it here later in the presentation, mm-hmm. this plant and in our CIP 2 years ago was the idea was to come online in the next 2 years?
By 2014.
2014, in 4 years. We've actually, in this plan, pushed it out. Yet, as far as the construction, but we've gone ahead and suggested that we go ahead, as Catherine is suggesting, is doing the design, so we can position ourselves if there's a recovery that we can then bring it forward. But we have to understand some of the largest investments in our infrastructure are these plants. And we're talking anywhere from north of $85 million, $80 million.
We're including some of the transmission lines, we're talking north of $100
million. $100
million.
So yeah. we're concerned about the impact, obviously, it has on rates. And when the timing of making sure you have this in place, because you don't want to be in a position where you have to turn away development because you're not there. So we're going to try to obviously phase this in by doing some of the design, but anticipating where that is. And we're also trying to fit it in with our existing debt structure that we have today. So there's these are large, they come in big chunks, these types of improvements. And so we're trying to be very careful and sensitive to both timing this with development and growth, while at the same time being sensitive to the impact it has in our debt program.
These are revenue bonds that pay for this, meaning the system supports itself. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have the users to do that, that's when you're talking about putting stress on the debt program.
Right.
These are not general obligation bonds. Right. This is not just have to state the obvious, since we're not deciding whether to provide police and fire versus a water plant.
Correct.
This is a whole different world because the water program does pay for itself.
Right. Users of the system pay for the system.
Right.
That's
okay.
Right.
Is it
Councilmember Summers?
This project in particular does have some consequences for the people who live around it, which is road improvements. We're kind of holding off on Elliott Road improvements, curb gutter and some other things, because we're waiting to put in big pipes under that'll move water from the CAP here. Is it possible maybe to move this project through incrementally, laying in those pipes in preparation for the plant so that we can do the road improvements and then we don't have to dig the road up later on? Does that make sense?
Well, it's possible, and we are doing some things incrementally down there. I mean, the reservoir and the facilities that are there are an example of that. But again, it just depends on the timing. You know, do you want to spend the money now, even though the growth isn't there?
Well, not the whole $100 million.
Actually, it's an interesting thought the council is coming up with. Once we get through the design, maybe we're not making the investment in the actual plant, but the infrastructure that would go on the adjoining street so we could get the street improvements done with the infrastructure in place. Because right now we're not committing to doing we don't want to do the street improvements if we're going to have to come back and tear those.
Those are big pipes that are going in and out of that treatment plant.
Big.
So the idea is that maybe you put a mile of big pipe in there that's almost like a conduit, a sleeve.
Great. Perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay.
The other way that we treat supplies, as I mentioned, is through wells. They are a component of supply. As I showed you in that chart, we do expect that someday we will be base loading our wells as part of meeting everyday demands. Right now we use them a little bit more for peaking and in select areas like Southeast Mesa. But someday they really are just a base component of our supplies, a small one, but an important one. They also provide reliability, and it's difficult to stress how important this is. For example, in West Mesa, the South Canal, through which we receive our surface water, goes out every year. It's dried up, and SRP cleans it out. If we didn't have well redundancy, we couldn't meet demands. So it's really important. The CAP is a much larger canal system, 336 miles end-to-end. It doesn't have annual outages, but when it has an outage, it can be very disruptive. So we are planning for the next outage, which will be about 3 weeks long, I believe, in 2015.
So basically they just quit pumping water out of the Colorado River, let it drain out, and they
try to do it by segments. You don't have to dry up the entire system all at once, but essentially, yeah, that's right. And we know that our segment of the canal will be dry for 3 weeks in 2015.
Okay.
There's also obviously drought. You know, the surface water supplies might not be available. You want to make sure you have enough wells. So we have about 39 operational wells in the system today. I'll show you a map of that. And we expect that we're going to need about 14 more by the time we get to build out. Most of those will, I think all of them, are in Southeast Mesa. Here's a map that gives you an idea of where they're located. And again, in West Mesa, annual SRP dry up, we use our wells. In East Mesa, it also provides redundancy as well. Another important job of ours is to ensure the quality of water in this system. And to ensure compliance with federal and state regulations, multiple permits, air for recharge, for storage of water, the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permits, which is through the Clean Water Act. We do sampling and laboratory analysis. We have our own lab. One of the upcoming new regulations that we're dealing with right now relates to disinfectant byproducts. We've actually, although first estimates were that this would be very expensive for us. I have to give a lot of credit to Susan Miller and her team, who've been working closely with some consultants to come up with some solutions that are actually going to be fairly affordable, I would say. Some real creative solutions for this.
I don't want to go into a lot of detail, but what is a disinfectant byproduct rule? Just in 25 words or less.
Go for it, Susan.
25 words, that's how it's
possible. Well, 25,000 words or less. Yeah. However you can do it.
Typically in surface water supplies, you have what we like to call total organic carbon. And if you think about a surface water supply and you think about the plants, aquatic plants that are within a reservoir, in a stream, the reeds on the side, they're carbon-based, just like we're carbon-based. So the carbon gets into the water. And when you take it into a plant, it reacts with the disinfectant, and the primary disinfectant that we use is chlorine. And when you take the organic compound and you add chlorine to it, it forms a chlorinated organic compound. And that's in 25 words or less, trying to make this simple, those are cancer-causing.
Gotcha.
We call them disinfection byproducts because
Is that a solid? Is it a gas? Is it
it's a molecule like water.
Okay, so it's just mixed in there.
Yeah, it would be just like you put some Kool-Aid in your water. So you don't, it isn't, you don't.
You, it's mixed all in there.
Bad Kool-Aid. I'm grasping here, you know. It's soluble within water. If you drank the water, you would not smell it. You would not see it. It isn't a particle. It is on a molecular level.
But one of the things we have going for us in our system is these disinfectant byproducts get worse with the age of water. And we're very fortunate in our system. Our water tends to be young. It doesn't sit around very long. So that's a good thing for us. And we're also looking at some ways to vent some of these molecules. And
glad we have young water.
Yeah, we do. We have young water. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So.
It's a chemical reaction.
Gotcha.
So. You know, the longer it sits there, the more it reacts. It's like stirring your Kool-Aid, you know, finally. It's all dissolved.
Back to Kool-Aid.
Stirring your bad Kool-Aid, yeah.
Filling Kool-Aid, you know, finally, you know, the longer you stir it, the more that it's in the water.
We also obviously monitor upcoming
runoffs. So what I get out of this is that Kool-Aid is carcinogenic?
Yeah.
Well, is that what I've learned in this?
Only in certain countries.
Oh, we just got sued. I'm glad Debbie Spinner wasn't there.
I did that. Get myself into trouble.
Halfway through your explanation.
Trying to come up with analogies.
No, that was good. Halfway through your explanation, I was sort of sorry I asked, but now I'm not, because it makes sense.
See what happens when these are lost?
I know. I'm working on it.
It's a runaway council.
Just glad because you had an acronym in there, and I hadn't seen an acronym in about 10 slides.
I'm working on it. There's one.
Let's have another acronym. DBPs, DOC. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. We also have a backflow prevention system, and that obviously you just want to make sure that, especially for like your commercial users and industrial users, the water that they use doesn't get sucked back into the system. So we have an active backflow prevention system. We also, and this is really Jake's area, and he's really excited to talk to you guys. We have we ensure a working distribution system.
Other than at the 8 o'clock news.
Yeah. And we move water to meet demand to where it needs to go. And I wanted to talk to you guys about this. I know everyone just is happy when water comes out of their tap, and they don't really think about it beyond that. But the aspects of meeting customer demands are actually fairly complicated. It's you have to be sure that the water is where the customer needs it. It's in a volume that is useful to the customer. It's there when the customer needs it. That the pressure is adequate. What is the customer using it for? And that it's always there when the customer needs it, and that the quality is good. So it's actually a fairly complicated equation that we have to solve every day. We do this through pump stations, PRVs, pressure regulating stations, water lines, valves, fire hydrants, and reservoirs. This map kind of shows you where some of the bigger ones are. And again, as I talked earlier, we can move water around the system, including from on to off project and back again. We do, one of our challenges is to move water.
Basically, this is just a big web and everything's interconnected.
Exactly, yeah, thank you. And we're just moving water constantly. And one of our challenges is moving that water to the upper elevations like Las Endes, for example, and then regulating the pressures, making sure the pressures aren't too strong when they come back downhill.
Sort of like when you have a glass of Kool-Aid.
Exactly.
And you're using a straw.
Move the Kool-Aid.
Move exactly. The Kool-Aid from pitcher to glass to straw. Yeah, exactly. I get that. I can understand that now.
So let's talk about water lines. I know it was a big topic yesterday. We do have about 2,300 miles of pipe. We target the worst areas for replacement, and there's a lot of things that go into what makes it the worst area, and we'll talk about that. And we do work very hard to coordinate replacement with transportation, with wastewater, and with gas, so that we're not continually tearing up streets, which I know irritates you guys. But this this chart gives you an idea.
Well, it doesn't matter whether it irritates us. It's the people that sort of we serve.
Right.
They are the ones
yeah,
that get
absolutely.
Irritated. And that's what we react to.
You're right. I should have said it that way. But the chart does show you, it gives you at least a picture of the age of our lines. And you'll notice that we do have lines that date back as early as 1919. So there are some very old pipes in our system. Yeah. It is, but we still got some that go back that far, especially here actually in the downtown area. And one of the things that we look at, and we'll talk about this was yesterday's issue, is the 1960s non-cured asbestos concrete pipes. That is what broke yesterday. I'm going to try to use my mouse here. Hopefully you can see it on the screen. It was this area here where we had the breaks, all four of them. I'm going to let Susan talk about this. We know that this, or Jake.
Yeah, let me Jake talk.
Jake, your turn.
You get to talk about Kool-Aid.
Why don't you tell them about ACP?
The particular age of this pipe is that small on the map a little bit ago, the 1960 to 70s pipe. But 1960s era ACP pipe is non-cured pipe. So basically ACP pipe is a structurally sound pipe. We don't have a lot of problems with it. Usually when it does crack, it's just a sheer crack. We can repair it with a clamp. This era of pipe, it's manufactured differently or not cured properly. When it goes, basically the top of the pipe lifts off and it goes. You saw in the news last night, a couple of those residents were saying that prior to that line going on Heather, their house was kind of shaking a little bit. And the one gentleman said he walked outside and saw the sidewalk lift up. That's typical of what happens with this type of pipe. And you see those breaks. A few years back, we had Broadway and Spencer. We've got a large 18-inch diameter main there that everybody thought that transmission main was the cause of all the flooding. It was actually the 1960s era ACP laterals coming off that connecting to the distribution system. So
what we had is we had an era where basically it was bad design of pipe.
Bad design, yeah.
And basically across the country, anyone who used in that area, we're unfortunately finding out that that's defective design, yeah. And we'll just have to How are we handling that? Are we waiting for failures, or are we trying to replace
it? We've got the areas of the city. We've got about, I think, about 200 miles of this type of pipe throughout the city. It's not just over in Northeast Mesa. We've got some in our Northwest Mesa. There's some in Northeast. We've had some around the Broadway or Power Road from Main Street down to Broadway a few years back, where we had some significant breaks there that typically break in a series. You have a section of pipe that breaks, you isolate it, you make a repair, you go to turn the water back onto the system, it finds a weak spot down the road. That's typically what happens with this pipe. Yesterday was kind of an anomaly. We've never seen four spots go at once. The system yesterday never lost pressure. The first initial leak started out as a leak, but when we dug it up, we saw that the leak was, rather than coming off the top, it was going along the sides. It was ready to blow. But the other three leaks in the area that are all part of the web but are different sections of pipe just kind of blew simultaneously. And so the reason that the one at Heather...
Related or just coincidental?
I would say it's coincidental and maybe some weather. And, you know, we had some really wet weather the last few days, and then we had a real cold night last night. And I think this just reacted to the conditions, and the pipe is continually to move. And I refer to it as a stress fracture. It just got a little too stressed, so... we didn't see any signs in the distribution system at our pump stations or our reservoirs that shows that we had any spikes in pressure, which sometimes can cause breaks.
Okay. Councilmember Summers.
Just for, I'm reading this slide here, and it says cured asbestos concrete, asbestos being a carcinogen. What is, when inhaled, what is the risk, if any?
The risk with asbestos cement or concrete pipe is when it dries and gets friable, and that's usually when you're taking it out. You're not using it for its intended purpose. Luckily for us, when we're working with water, that pipe remains wet, and as long as those fibers remain wet, they're contained in the pipe. It's when you try to cut it or you throw it off to the side and it sits there for a little while, and you've got a fractured end of pipe that is now friable because it's not encased the way it was intended when it was designed. So that's the danger.
Two questions. One, is there any risk to people who are consuming the water downstream? None. And secondly, when we remove these pipes and replace them, does that become a hazardous materials removal?
It is.
Paying a lot of money?
According to the NESHAP laws, is as long as it remains in its intended state, it's a non-regulated construction material. Unless you store it. If we take out a mile of ACP pipe and we take it over to our plant and we let it sit there, now because of the amount of pipe we have stored there, it becomes a regulated waste.
But disposal of this stuff, I assume when we replace it, we're going to rip this out and replace it. Is it special handling and disposal?
Depending on the amount that you remove. When we, like a situation like yesterday, we can remove the pieces out, we encapsulate the ends, and then we can deliver it to a landfill as construction waste because it doesn't meet the quantity, and we've encapsulated the ends, we've removed the fibrous activities. So,
right. Councilmember Higgins?
So it's buried within. This asbestos fibers are within the walls, not the walls. The walls are safe. It's in between. So that's why you just have to do the ends. Is that what you're saying?
It's concrete-based material that has the asbestos is for the fiber, much like in the steam fitting unit that you would put the fibers in the tape and the wraps that they would put on the pipes. It's when those fibers break and become friable, and they're minuscule. So as long as that pipe is wet internally and externally, when we have to cut it, we try not to cut it with power means. We don't use a chop saw. We have to use what we call a chain snapper where it breaks, and we have to wet it when we remove it, we always put a tarp or something underneath the pipe in the trench so that that is all bagged material and is sent off. And as long as you're handling it correctly and you're not releasing the fibers in the air, it does not become a hazard.
So this pipe is almost safer than Kool-Aid?
Yeah, almost.
As long as it's wet.
As long as it's wet.
As long as you cover it with Kool-Aid, we're okay.
Okay.
We're not using it as a construction.
Yeah. No.
It's not in the specs anymore.
And
you can't get it anymore.
Just to get an idea, too, we target these areas, but we also try to pair them with break histories because there are batches that perform perfectly well. So we really try to see, okay, not only is it there, but is there a history of problems? We try to pair it up also with our oldest batch of pipe, which is the 1919 to 1950 pipes. You can see from this chart that it's really the downtown area where we still have some of these pipes. The other reason we target these pipes for replacement is that their diameter is too small. You can't get enough water through there for firefighting. The fire department is aware of this. They know these areas, and they bring in pumper trucks and other equipment to deal with it. So what we do is we try to go through and identify whole neighborhoods or whole areas, even quarter sections, where we're going to go in and replace basically everything, including the valves and hydrants. Oops, sorry. We are also, there are a few expansion pipelines that are needed. They're, as you can imagine, mainly in Southeast Mesa. These will go in depending on the timing of development. Not all of these are going to go in the next year or two. We're going to wait and see how things shake out down there. But those will also help improve pressures in the area as well. We also run the Utilities Control Center, which is really the heart of the system. The gentleman you see here is Randy Ottens. He's in charge of the control center. They control the pumps, the pressure stations, the reservoirs, the wells. They're the ones making sure that pressures are okay and water's moving where it needs to go at any given time. They also have to pay attention to the legal flavor of the water and make sure that we're following, you know, using water within all of our contracts. And they've done a really great job, I want to brag about them, in trying to minimize energy costs. You know, they have to turn on wells, they have to turn on pumps, we have to maintain adequate pressure in the system, but they've done a really good job of trying to at least optimize the system to use less energy. They also provide 24/7 dispatch for other departments because that control center is staffed 24/7. So last I'm going to talk about metering and delivering water. We have about 147,000 meters in the system. And I'll let Jake talk about this again, but over this last year, we had a sustained effort to replace a very large amount of them that were very old and were not performing adequately. Unfortunately, as water meters get old, they tend to underestimate the amount of water that is actually delivered to a home or business. So, Jake, do you want to talk about that a little?
Yeah, basically what we did is we came to management a year ago and kind of put a program together saying that we were behind on our meter changeouts. Usually the meter changeout was designed that every 10 years a meter should start to slow down, so that's really the target date that you should be replacing them. And we had some meters in the ground that have been in the ground for 20-plus years. And based on some of the experience and history that we had with certain types of meters, Dave Dubois, our meter shop supervisor, put a program together. And with working with customer service, field operations people, and the hiring of some temporary staff to put some manpower to this, we identified about 35,000 meters that we know that were running inaccurate, and we were losing revenue because of that. So in a period of about 9 months with our staff and the direction of Dave Dubois, the meter shop supervisor, we got 35,000 meters out of the system. We've seen some increase in revenues based on that. We're also changing out some of the large industrial meters that we know were getting old and starting to run a little bit slower. But due to that, we are able to now look at our program moving forward. We've got another 40,000 meters that exceed the 10-year limit. But what we've done is we've taken some represented samples from those meters, and they're proving to run within 97% of accuracy. So the urgency to get those out is not as dire as the first 35,000. So now we're going to back off a little bit in the next coming years, start taking some samples of the system, hoping to get to those meters before they start to degrade and run slower.
So our future system will be based more on statistical sampling rather than wholesale replacement. And we do expect nearly $1 million a year in increased revenue because of this effort. I have to brag because Jake and Dave Dubel and Sean Murray won the Exceptional Customer Service Award for this program just last week or the week before. So we also expect, obviously, there will be a decrease in system losses because we're more accurately measuring the amount of water that goes to our residents. And let me skip ahead a slide. And here's kind of the proof in the pudding. Is that you can see on this slide how much losses in our distribution system have fallen as a result of this program, down almost to 2%, which is really excellent. We're also replacing, as Jake said, the commercial meters and vaults. There's around over 500 of them in the system, and about 300 of them are deteriorated. So next, I want to talk to you about system funding and a little more detail on the dollars of our capital program. As the mayor mentioned earlier, the system is paid for by those who use it, and it's paid for in two ways, through customer rates and through revenue bonds. So this is what we would like to propose for the 2010 bond authorization, should there be one. In the water program, when we respond to customers' needs, we don't use capital dollars for that. That's all basically O&M. And there is some capital expense associated with ensuring sustainable supplies, but we will actually talk about that on the wastewater side because a lot of that relates to reclaimed water, not directly to the water program. So the first thing I'm going to talk to you about are some of the capital needs for treating supplies. And just to refresh your memory, this is, you know, the wells and the water treatment plants. We do need to replace some of the aging facilities at Brown Road. And we also have to replace some facilities at Val Vista. Much of the expense of Val Vista actually has to do with transmission main rehabilitation and not the actual treatment process itself. At the Brown Road plant, we're looking at some replacement of pumps, bulk storage tanks, some equipment rebuilds, and some enhanced security. We're also looking at rehabilitating older wells and the equipment associated with the wells. We're also looking at, kind of as part of this stopgap in Southeast Mesa, we're looking at doing some lines associated with these wells so that the water can be delivered into the reservoir down on Signal Butte to enhance reliability in the system. And as I mentioned earlier, the Signal Butte Water Treatment Plant, we are continuing with basis of design and continuing with design itself. And that will put us in a position where in a couple years from now, we can decide whether to begin construction or delay construction depending on the timing of growth. And you'll see the asterisks down at the bottom of the slide. It is a major undertaking, well over $100 million for the Signal Butte plant. That's why we want to be so careful about the timing of it. In terms of ensuring the quality of water in the system, we talked quite a lot about disinfectant byproduct mitigation. And again, I'm proud to say that we've come up with ways to deal with this relatively inexpensively compared to other cities who will literally invest tens of millions of dollars for this problem. So that's the good news. And we are also going to be replacing some compliance lab equipment. In terms of the distribution system itself, we do have to replace a bunch of aging pumps that move the water around, and we do have some major work that needs to be done on our main reservoirs, which are 40, 50 years old. I'm not sure how old they are at this point, they're pretty old.
Well, Brooks and Lindsay were put in when Val Vista was put in, so they're from 1975.
Yeah.
And Pasadena, it was one of the original city reservoirs. It goes back to the 1950s.
Okay. And the lines, we intend to spend a fair amount of money replacing aging lines. Obviously, they're a problem, as we saw yesterday. As I said earlier, we try to target whole areas. We try to get as many birds with one stone as we can. That might be ACP, it might be small diameter pipes, it might be pipes that don't have hydrants or adequate flow. So we target wholesale areas, mainly in West Mesa, but also there are some projects in East Mesa.
And Jake, we're trying to be very aggressive in this program as far as the replacement, because if not, we end up doing what we had to do yesterday, where we have to go in on an emergency basis, reallocate staff and resources to go out to these locations. And, while we can probably keep the cost fairly similar to what it take to just do a normal replacement, it really causes a tremendous amount of disruption to the neighborhood. We've had, times where it's become even impacting private property as far as the water flooding. And so it's very disruptive to our streets. The idea here is on our whole waterline replacement program, and you'll see this later when we do gas, but as we target these areas to go in and do the water replacement in these areas that really need it, we also come in with it's in our gas service area, we'll go ahead and replace the gas lines also. And then we also coordinate it with the street department, so we're trying to do those in a planned process. If we don't do it, and what happens yesterday, we miss that opportunity because we're having are out there on an emergency basis replacing things. So we're trying to get a lot more aggressive on, especially in the older parts of the community where these lines are, to get out there and replace them before we continue to have more incidences like we've done. Now, we'll probably still have more of these emergency situations, but we're really trying, I think Catherine and folks are really trying to do a good job trying to, you know, our goal is to try to replace that pipe right before its useful life. But there's a lot of work to be done, and so we're working to try to strategically exercise these replacement programs.
Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. I'm glad to hear you say that. The area along Signal Butte south of Elliott Road, you have some water line replacements or upgrades in there. Certainly, that's an area where we can team up with the streets to look at street and drainage improvements in that area. There's some minor flooding. It's mostly north of that. But I also wanted to point out a major improvement, which goes to my previous point about economic development, which is along, it's over on the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport side. That's Sossaman, right?
Correct. That, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sossaman Road. If we're going to see economic growth along there, one of the problems with this is it was a former military base. They put in just enough asphalt to drive trucks on, and if you ever drive down there, it's barely wide enough. And just enough water supply to supply the military base, which is not adequate for the type of uses, which is ASU Polytechnic and our aerospace business efforts down there to supply them. So this project will help grow the Polytechnic campus, will help grow our aerospace and high-wage job industry. So this is an extremely important project. Also, I believe the Sossaman Road to the north, which I saw in a previous slide that was being done, that is a 24-inch line, supply line. That's important as well. It opens up that whole area inside the freeway loop for development, too. So I'm very interested to see all these projects move forward. Thank you, Mayor.
Well, looking at that, though, looking at your map, that line right there is currently in design and construction.
Yeah, I don't know if it's in
the Sossaman line.
That's what I'm referring to. It's an important line.
It's hard to see that.
Yeah. It's in existing authorization.
Yeah, it's in the existing authorization. Yeah. So that's not covered by the new authorization.
No, that's what I was saying. Right. That I saw it in a previous slide that was under construction. It was important.
Okay.
No, you're right.
And to Chris's point about the timing of replacing aging lines, I think Jake had some. Did some work to look at what it costs us in terms of claims when these lines cause problems.
I'll use as an example, a few years back, we were seeing significant water line breaks similar to like what was yesterday. The issue with yesterday, it was kind of clean, per se. It didn't look like that on the TV, but we don't expect to see a lot of claims. We're out there today. The big work now is to clean up the roads where all the mud, all that stuff that used to be in the ground is now on the streets. But we've had areas, I'll use an example, South Robin Lane, we've got a Montessori school there, and we had an issue that for several months, and usually happened at certain times of the year when it got warmer and then when it got cooler, that same type of pipe, that ACP pipe, 60s era, would explode, and we've flooded a school several times. And I went back through our people over at Risk Management, and they gave me the total number so far to date of what we put out there. We had about $76,000 worth of claims. And once we identified that through engineering and put it as an emergency project, which means we pulled back on some other projects and put some funding over to get this line replaced, we did it in two phases, the total to that project was roughly around $144,000. So you can see that when you react and respond to some of these things, it's not only the damages that are costly, it's the manpower and the O&M cost, the material cost to deploy staff. We had four separate crews out there yesterday fixing those lines so we could get that done in a hurry. And in the meantime, we had a fifth leak somewhere else. So that's the difficulty of having to deploy staff to try to serve our customers and get that. So if you look at the dollar amount, it's not a much. Price per foot by a contractor is usually going to be within a few dollars or so. It's the impact of what it does to the distribution system and the streets and the neighborhoods. And so that's the examples of what it's cost and why putting a program together to start replacing this older infrastructure, it makes sense.
We're also looking at spending some money on asset management and condition assessments. This has been a major push for us over the last few years. And that is, as Jake said, and as Chris mentioned, to just get a better handle on exactly what our assets are, how old are they, and to better predict when they're going to fail so we can replace them proactively rather than reactively. We're also looking at spending some money on security enhancement at remote facilities.
Okay, Councilmember Summers has a question.
Just a quick point. On the security enhancements, are we going to aggressively pursue federal grants? I would assume that there are some grants for this and maybe dollar-for-dollar match.
Absolutely. Thank you, Councilmember Summers. And in fact, we're working with Police's Homeland Security Unit, and they've offered their assistance. They've been wonderful.
And I think, Council, you're also going to see we've experienced, this last year, some significant vandalism of some of our facilities. And you're going to see in the budget that recognizing that we probably need to get the police department a little more involved in patrols and areas like that, and recognizing that's a resource for this department and utilizing the police department. We need their assistance. We need probably some more active presence by them in some of these plants, at least putting it in their patrol and more conscious about where they're going, because we've had some concerns that we've had some vandalism that may have just been, what's the word I'm looking for, just vandalism, not with malicious intent necessarily, other than destroying something. Versus
how do you vandalize without malicious intent?
Well, what I'm suggesting is it wasn't
ice vandalism.
It's not terrorism.
It was just it was pranks. It was kids. It was joyriding type of vandalism.
But that certainly opened our eyes to the exposure we have. Potentially vulnerability to the entire system.
And if it's joyriding vandalism, it means you don't have enough of the base security, because that would stop that kind of.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I think there's a difference between spray painting graffiti on the outside of a wall and actually getting inside
in
a facility where there's risk of.
They're just
Lord forbid contamination of.
That's our big concern.
Absolutely. And just so you know, we're looking at enhancements. We do have security at these sites. For example, our reservoirs are tied into an alarm on our SCADA system. If someone gets into a reservoir, we know it. So, I mean, there is security there. I don't want people to think there isn't. It's just we want to enhance some of that security and make it a little more difficult.
Maybe some opportunities for putting some cameras up remote.
That's we looked at that.
Right.
That's one item working with a local group that does that.
I was going to say, we do have a local Mesa company. Plug for them.
Yeah. But we are also,
we'd love to use.
We also
another plug for them.
Feel like it may be important also for the utility to actually support some stronger police presence in these areas also.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, when you have Jack
and
stand out there.
I meant to point out earlier on some of these slides, but I'll do it here. As we've been going along, you may have noticed that in fiscal year 10-11, you've seen a fair number of zeros for expenses. And that's because, as you're aware, we have existing authorization and bids have been coming in relatively low, in fact, very low. And we've been able to realize some significant savings, which will then basically mean that we won't have to ask for as much new authorization as we would otherwise have to. So that's kind of nice. We will continue with our meter test and replacement program, though much scaled back compared to what it has been due to Jake's efforts. And we will continue with our efforts to upgrade the large meter vaults.
And real quickly, we estimated that the result of all those replacements, we may have realized about another $1 million
in
lost revenues that were being lost to the city because our meters were not accurate. And so the more we do this, the better off the system is. There's a payback.
There's a quick payback.
There is.
Okay.
So in general terms, we're looking at about $131 million in capital and life cycle replacements over 4 years. To put it in perspective, if you go back to that system value number of $2.3 billion, it's relatively small. It's a small percentage of the value of our system. We will continue to assess the capital needs related to growth and system expansion, and the third and final, it would be the final water treatment plant, and we'll see what the timing of that might turn out to be.
So this number does not include a lot of the high growth.
Right.
You saw some that it's in the current authorization,
very
but it doesn't
low.
Include the new plant or the pipelines. We've
said
right now we don't. Our crystal ball doesn't tell us clearly enough when we expect that growth, but we're going to do some.
Well, we
of
know
the
it's not
going
to be in the next 2 to 4 years.
That's why we pushed it outside of this authorization.
Right. Yes. We have about after fiscal year.
Hold
I'm sorry.
One second.
Yes.
I would add that caveat from what we discussed earlier that perhaps that there is certain
some of those
small projects.
Yeah, no,
like
no, no. That would be we could that's in, we can include that.
That
in
we could put in, and I'm pleased with the so far what you have put in, because those pipes that we are looking to fund in this revenue are probably the immediate needs, particularly around the airport and over along Signal Butte. So
absolutely.
I think that's a good, that is working toward the future.
Absolutely. And like I said, we will continue with design of the plant, and if growth picks up, we're ready to go. So $131 million in needs for life cycle replacement. We, after fiscal year 9-10, we've got about $35 million in remaining authorization. So we would propose about a $96 million bond authorization for the fall of 2010. To put that in historic perspective, it's lower than it was in 06, and a little bit higher than in 2000 and 2004, but certainly in that range.
Now, Catherine, in the next question, first of all, this is, once again, these are revenue bonds.
Yes.
Which means that the payback for these bonds are included in the rates.
Yes.
You know, we're going to get into specific rates later, month or
No, in the next coming
weeks.
April?
Weeks.
April 1st.
Yeah,
first
okay,
April,
in the
yeah.
next month, we're going to get into rates. As part of our overall rate approach, we include anticipation of ongoing debt service. So we're not looking at this and saying, okay, now we have to scramble in our rates to pick up additional bonds. Because like you said, with any utility system, you are constantly in a life cycle situation where you're replacing equipment, where you're doing upgrades and things like that. And so I would assume that this bond amount is part of our overall approach, which anticipates we will have ongoing life cycle issues and therefore be constantly issuing bonds to replace aged equipment.
Absolutely.
So we're not looking at a huge rate spike
Mayor,
this new debt.
No, Mayor, we will bring the rate discussion to the council. It'll be fairly consistent with what we've showed you last year.
Yeah.
As far as the expected, but now remember, though, there are still expected rate increases, but
right.
this fits into that model.
Well, what I want to say is I don't want to think that you are presenting us a program that all of a sudden is, oh, my gosh, we have this new need. This really is an ongoing program and is very consistent with what we go through every couple of years where we constantly are improving and upgrading and replacing equipment, and therefore it's built into our overall rate approach and rate structure.
And Mayor, actually, I think what we could say is because of, and this has been a constant, consistent story with our bond packages, is that we've been able to not only deliver the projects, we've delivered them under budget, and as a result, we're rolling some of those dollars forward, which is actually a savings. And we'll take away some of the pressure on the rate. Over
yeah, some of that remaining authorization
right.
is due to savings, which we're rolling forward into new projects.
Which will help, it just helps us
right.
overall in the rates, yes.
Okay, Councilman Richens.
What's the total amount of the fund transfer between from water and wastewater to the general fund?
Oh, the between water, oh.
It's about 60.
The 60?
Mr. Odom?
Well, water and wastewater in total. I don't have the breakdowns with me. I didn't bring my water models. I'm sorry. But it's 83.
Hey, you don't 86. Carry your water models with you?
Yeah. I've got lots of models.
But not your water models.
Yes. $83,615,000 a year total enterprise transfer. They
water's
about
50%
of that.
Yeah, water's about 50. Wastewater is significantly less. I can't remember.
And remember, this should have no impact on that since our program, since the starting with the previous council, we fixed in the amount of transfer so that is basically a programmed transfer
right.
rather than a year-to-year type of a thing. Yeah.
What would these models look like if we were to use more of that money to reinvest in the system instead of transferring it to the general fund? Instead of debt financing the improvements, what if we were to reinvest some of the money that we transfer to Mesa General Fund and put it just back into the system? What do the models look like? They improve our debt position.
Oh.
What are the ramifications there?
It certainly improves it on the utility side.
And well, it improves the debt position. It
essentially wipes out
our general fund position.
Your general fund side. You essentially be eliminating 30% of your
yes.
general fund budget.
What would some of the trade-offs need to be if we wanted? Because I get asked frequently about mm-hmm. that. So what would some of the trade-offs need to be on the revenue side to make up for that? What are our options?
Well, as far as on the general fund side,
there are no options.
A primary property tax? I mean, you would have
well,
to.
Basically, there are no options.
There are no options today. I mean, essentially, you would have an $80 million plus $90 million plus deficit in the general fund.
Out of about a 320.
Yeah, about a one-third of your general fund would be.
I think about one-fourth.
I just thought it was important to bring that up because I don't think people really understand how that works together.
Yeah, no. And listen, it's been the model that Mesa chose to follow for the last 70 years is using its utility fund to help support the general fund. It's not a new phenomenon. It was a conscious decision. I've got the minutes to the meeting where it shows the council made a decision to use the enterprise fund. It started with the electric enterprise to help fund the operations of the general fund. And it's not uncommon. It is a very common practice. In my previous lifetime, we had a very robust gas and electric company that funded a significant portion of the general fund. And that's not that unusual. So we try to be very sensitive, obviously, and the council does too, what that amount is and the impact it has. But it is, for us, probably, it is by far, I'll say it right now, is by far the most stable, consistent revenue source of the city. It is much more consistent, obviously, than sales tax, as we're currently experiencing. And you could argue that even if you look at the utility sales, from a stability standpoint, is more consistent than even a property tax. So, and the only thing, the point is that's been in place. It's a practice we've used. And if we didn't have that, it's the impact is we look at the city as a whole. We don't try to separate the enterprise from the police department. It's all part of the services we provide to the citizens.
Okay.
Thank you, Councilman Richens.
Last slide. You got your
there
last
we go.
Slide.
And last, I just wanted to say thank you for your time, and in particular, Jack Friedline here. thanks you for your time.
Isn't that a bow tie? Are you sure that's Johan's grandpa or something?
Yeah. These are apparently City of Mesa staff found in the old archive room of the library. So, any further questions?
No, thank
you. All right,
you.
Great.
Can I just say thank you? This is the most interesting Our Water presentation I could have ever hoped for. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Because there were lots of pictures. We like pictures.
Yes, thank you.
I think Kool-Aid. Folks, the diagrams that are in here that show the system and how it works were done in-house. Maybe not quite to scale, but done in-house. And council, as you're making presentations in the community, I think this is we try to combine both the narrative and the illustration here. Please let us know, because I think this is it helps the community understand
those diagrams were really, I'm not kidding now. Those are really good because they explain in a very simple ways even I can understand.
Thank you.
That's an accomplishment.
I appreciate your time. I know it's difficult to sit through this much material. And we will be back for wastewater, but I can assure you it's a shorter presentation. So.
No, this is important because, you know, what to expand on what Chris said, we get a lot of comment about the use, for example, of, we call it enterprise, the business side of the city, electric, water, gas, wastewater, those utilities, to fund our general fund obligations, police and fire, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of discussion about how somehow this is a backdoor tax. No, it's not. We're up front. It's right through the front door. And I agree. I'm not going to apologize for it because I think it's essential to have this stable revenue that has been used for years and years and years. It's known. It's out there. I think that the previous council took a very good step in basically freezing those, but putting those into a program to where we're not up and down. That we do control the amount. We're not using it willy-nilly, that it's very, very well planned, and we know going in how much, and we have not deviated from that. I think the city has shown a discipline with and respect with the enterprise funds that we have set amounts, and we live within those as budgets. We have so far really avoided the temptation to use those as almost a slush fund,
right?
Which this city was accused of doing for a long time, and I think it was very. I applaud the previous council for establishing that program, and I will continue to support that. But this is important. So it's important to know where this is, not only from the service delivery standpoint, because you know, you get down to water, and that's one of the most basic needs, and we're responsible for providing that. And I think we do a great job. I really do. In spite of our asbestos pipes, which, you know, every other city is dealing with, we're all dealing with that same issue. We do a great job as a city, and I'm proud. And our water delivery system is among the best. We were very, very progressive back in the decades ago. Mesa was a leader and continues to be a leader in our water inventory. The fact that we have a very, very secure water position for all of our city for decades to come, and in how we treat and how we deliver and then how we dispose of that. I think, for example, that settlement with Gila River was, I do applaud you, it was a great settlement because it assured us the primary water supplies that our citizenry needs. So thank you. It was a good presentation, and we need to constantly remind ourselves and also remind our citizens how important this is and what it is, because this is basic from both a financial standpoint and a water standpoint. So thank you very much. Appreciate it. Any other questions? Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is to discuss and provide direction on the submittal of letters regarding the Land and Water Conservation Fund. I'll turn it over to Council Member Dave Richens.
As many of you know, I work for a conservation organization in my day job. And one of the issues that's prominent in Congress right now is the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which is a funding source for local park projects. I believe we've used it in the past. I think Riverview is actually funded through this mechanism, if I remember right. But it's not general. It's money that's generated by oil and gas royalty revenues for offshore drilling. And so that fund was established to do land conservation throughout the United States. And it's a really good way to help fund some of our local parks projects. Senator McCain made it part of his campaign for president in 2008 to support this fund also. And so I just wanted to encourage our congressional delegation, particularly Senator McCain and Congressman Flake, who have positions on natural resources committees both in the House and the Senate, to continue to support the Land and Water Conservation Fund and funding for local park projects, which is looks like it's continuing to dry up on local and state levels. And so any funding we can get for our local parks is a good thing. Thanks.
Okay. And the proposal is that we adopt this formally as a council, and we submit the letter with under our signatures. We have a motion from Councilmember Summers, a second from Councilmember Fenter. Any discussion or questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you very much. Acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. Motion by Councilmember Summers, a second by Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? They have been acknowledged. Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Mayor. Two events out of several I'll mention. One went to Monta Vista, one of the communities in my neighborhood, and I had a pancake breakfast there. Hundreds in attendance. For many years, I think we didn't have a lot of our winter visitors coming back because of the economy. Rest assured, they seem to be back now in force and participating in our community and hopefully spending money and generating some sales tax revenue. But it was a fantastic effort. Some of our firefighters, off-duty firefighters, helped cook the pancakes, so they had firefighter food for the morning. Also, on your behalf, Mayor, I attended an event at the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport it was a baseball event. It is a collaborative effort to create a little culture and entertainment at our airport. Maybe Mr. Brady can elaborate a little bit more, but what happened was a group of students at ASU Polytechnic, as part of their capstone course, created an idea for a family-friendly environment at the airport. It is in collaboration with the airport and with the museum and several former baseball Hall of Famers who are investing in this and are really a unique opportunity to down there for kids who Who are they, Mr. Brady? Our two big baseball stars?
Yeah. Our Hall of Famers, Forgy Jenkins and Bob Eller.
Feller.
Sorry. Thank you. Had an opportunity to meet them, and it was very unique. It was fun. And gave you all the credit.
Gave me all the credit?
Yeah. For a change.
I get blamed for enough stuff I didn't do. I might as well take credit for something I didn't do either. But thank you.
I was trying to give you a break.
Oh, okay. Anything else? I'm sorry, Councilman Richens.
I had the opportunity this week to attend Mayor Phil Gordon's State of the City address for the City of Phoenix. I don't know why, but I keep getting invited to attend State of the City addresses in various cities. I've been to Tucson's and Phoenix's this year. But I found yours far more interesting than his. But he did an okay job, nonetheless.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah, I was going to say.
And also, we opened Fire Station 218, which is located on Alma School Road and 8th Street, to much fanfare and great attendance and a well-timed departure by the fire department on a call. Yeah. So I appreciate all the people that work so hard to make that event happen, and also the construction crew and the architects crew and our engineering department and our firefighters, and I'm going to leave somebody out, but it was a really well-done event and a very well-executed project that I think showed the good stewardship that our city has over our citizens' tax dollars. And it was just really well done. Came in, I believe, not only it was ahead of time and under budget, which is so rare in government, but we managed to pull it off. We're not going to make it so rare in Mesa, I guess. Thanks.
Good. Spring training is back, and we've all had the opportunity, council, to attend opening day, and also we've dodged one bullet with rain and not another bullet, so hopefully it'll be warm and sunny the rest of the season, but that's been good. Welcome back to Cubs. May they stay here a long time, we hope. Had overwhelming support, though, from people who are coming. It was amazing visiting the games and the number of people who came up to me and told me stories about, you know, one lady this is her 23rd season in a row. She's bought season tickets, same seat, from out of state, and this is just part of their life. And I can't tell you the number of people who came up and told me the same story. So, you know, it's real. The people do come in. They come in for the Cubs. They come in for spring training, and they love Mesa. So hopefully that'll continue. I had the opportunity yesterday morning to represent the city at the scouting breakfast over in Phoenix, about 500 people celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Boy Scouts of America. And it was interesting because there was, you know, Mesa scouting is the largest district, I believe, within the Grand Canyon Council. And almost 60,000 boys and girls are served with scouting in the Grand Canyon Council, and a huge, huge impact. So congratulations to scouting organization on their 100th anniversary, and I enjoyed listening to Cardinals coach Ken Wisenhunt, an Eagle Scout,
really?
And Secretary of State Ken Bennett, an Eagle Scout. So, see, it was good. It was very, very good. Okay, Councilmember Higgins.
Yeah, on last Friday I attended Motorcycles on Main Street, which probably had over, I would say, 1,000 motorcycles, more than 1,000 motorcycles. The streets were blocked off, and it was a wonderful, amazing event. I have never seen so many people in downtown Mesa, and it was a lot of fun. You should go, because even though you had to wait in line for most of the restaurants, the lines were out on the street.
That's a good problem to have.
It's a wonderful problem, and it was just a lot of fun. There was a lot of energy, so it was a great time, and it's always the first Friday of the month is Motorcycles on Main Street. So if you have not come down, you should definitely take the opportunity to come down.
And there are more and more of these types of events happening weekly
Fridays
in downtown, between this and second Fridays, and I think we'll go over what's coming up this Friday and Saturday in downtown. So come on downtown. It's a happening place.
And one more thing, I had another event too, actually, more in the same evening. Andy Dobler, who's a Hacienda, lives in Hacienda, which is a neighborhood in my district, had a big neighborhood party that I attended. But Andy is one of our great Citizen of Police Academy graduates that's very involved in the neighborhood policing. And I just wanted to give him a
Block Party.
Block Party, that's the word. Thank you. And the Natural History Museum fundraiser, which was, thank you, Saturday night at the Natural History Museum was a wonderful event. And if you see it and have the opportunity to attend next year, you should definitely go. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Mr. Brady.
Yes, Mayor and Council, following up on the comment, this Friday, March 12th from 6 to 10 p.m. will be the Blues Baseball in Balderdash. That will include a lot of great music and food. And then again, it will happen again on the Saturday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. So invite everybody down to participate in those events. And remind Council that the Thursday, March 18th study session has been canceled. And then we will, though, have a study session Monday, March 22nd, our council meeting and study session. The study session, please note the start time. We do have several items that we need to review with the council that are on that agenda. And since we won't have the Thursday pre-meeting, we will do that then. And I believe that's also the same day that Dr. Crow will be here before the as part of that study session. So,
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
And we also will have a public safety committee meeting on the 18th. I think the exact time has not yet been set. It's either at 9 or 10. That was before we had canceled the study session. So we will be meeting on Thursday the 18th, but we'll verify the time.
Okay.
Everyone going to be here? Okay.
And then just one other thing on the 22nd. Following the council meeting that that evening, we will have the swearing-in ceremony for the new police chief, which will be probably around 7 o'clock that evening. So and you'll be getting your invitation for that. Thank you.
Councilmember Kavanaugh. Councilmember Summers.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I keep looking. I'm challenged.
He's looking at me.
I'm name challenged again.
You're having a tough time today.
Yes, I am.
Two other meetings I'd like to make some folks aware about. On Tuesday the 23rd, I'll be having a neighborhood meeting in the area of Signal Butte and Elliott. This is for residents of that neighborhood who have experienced some local flooding. On hand, we'll have Beth Ewing from engineering and Dan Clevenger from our transportation talk about what projects we are currently doing to alleviate some of that local drainage issue. It's not really flooding as much as a drainage issue. And how future projects, such as what we heard today with the Signal Butte Water Treatment Plant, will help with that as well. So that's Tuesday the 23rd at Canyon Rim Elementary School between 7 and 8:30 p.m. The second one is I will host a pancake breakfast for my district on Saturday the 27th at Fire Station 205 at 730 South Greenfield Road at 9 a.m. to 11. I invite other members of the council, Mr. Brady, our city attorney, to come along and come hungry. Thank you, Mayor.
Good. Okay, anything else? I have one other thing. It's my wife's birthday. Happy birthday, Kim. And if you see her, please tell her how much younger she looks than her husband. And how much more mature she acts.
There's one other birthday.
There's one other birthday in here. Is that what that balloon is for? Mr. Brady, do you have a... Well, I know that. I thought you were going to announce to everyone.
I was trying to. No, I. Well,
so not that. Okay, now this is just a coincidence. The city attorney is not my wife. They just happen to have the same birthday.
That's good.
So we need to clarify that.
And she still looks younger than you.
And she still looks. Yeah. The funny thing is, they both look younger than I do, but they both act older, more mature than I do, and I can't figure that one out. Well, happy birthday, Debbie.
Thank you, Mary.
Appreciate it.
39
again. Okay, so we appreciate it. Okay. Ms. Crocker. Well, we need to, Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak from the public?
No requests.
Okay, we have a motion to move into executive session from Councilmember Summers, a second from Councilmember Finter. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are moving into executive session. Thank you very much, and happy birthday, Kim and Debbie.
Aye.